FM 104.6, the heart of the island's community.
We've got a special guest in the studio, and I don't know where to start. We've got John Irvine from White Fibre. And first of all, John, it's been a couple of years. Welcome back.
Good afternoon. It's great to be here.
I've got to congratulate you on, because the last time you were in, you'd lost loads of weight. That's the easy bit, it's keeping it off, and you've done all right, haven't you?
The hard bit's keeping it off, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've done all right for 3 years now, yeah.
Good. You're looking well. Looking well.
Thank you. I'm not marrying you. I'm married.
I want to talk about squirrels at some point, because I know that that was the last time. But just touch on it, because I know that you've given us an update. Because the last time you were in, you were talking about setting up a PhD, and that's moved on. But hold that thought, because I want to go back in time. I want you to give us a bit of a history lesson when it comes down to white fibre. So can you remember when the first fibre person was connected?
Well, I mean, white fibre and its, you know, previous incarnations have been around since 2001. So our very first customer was connected 2001. As you know, we've got this big upgrade to full fibre and rolling full fibre broadband all across the island. So our first full fibre customer was connected summer 2018. That was like in a pilot area just to prove the technology. And so, you know, since then, it took a while to get going, but we're going hammer and tongs now. So I think 65,000 homes in the island can now get service from us. And about 19,000 of those are actually taking service.
Wow.
And are now customers of White Fibre. So I can't wait. We're not sure. We're knocking on the door of being number one on the island, which is, you know, great news for a, you know, relatively small local company competing against, you know, the big boys with their national TV and radio and newspaper advertising. So you know, it's going well, and a big thank you to those 19,000 customers for their custom.
Fantastic. Congratulations on that, because that's a massive achievement. Because I thought it was a bit further back than 2018, but that's a short space of time. And then, let's not forget, lots of people have, we had that thing called COVID.
Yes.
That sort of interrupted a lot of things. And we had our system installed, sort of just coming out of COVID. And I know you guys come around with masks and so on and did everything correctly. So, you know, that would have hampered, and it could have been even more, the figures could have been even higher if that hadn't happened.
I mean, but bizarrely, I mean, COVID was bad for pubs and hospitality. It was great for broadband companies because everybody wanted to work from home.
Yeah.
And needed to work from home, and needed good broadband in order to be able to do so. So, you know, I know as COVID was kicking off, we had a couple of big projects, very short notice, putting lots of extra bandwidth into the NHS so that lots of their workers could work from home, and a similar story for the Isle of Wight Council so that lots of their workers could work from home as well. And then lots of individuals, you know, wanting to get better broadband at home for the same reason.
No, fantastic. Those are the things we don't shout about because, you know, we forget that those people that were not able to and so on and the NHS, you know, boosting their services as well. I think that's really good news, and it's really, really helpful. And I've got so many other questions I want to ask you. I can't wait to talk about squirrels. But before then, what's the plan? When you've done X amount of people connected, X amount of people, then what happens when everybody can have it? You then have to stop going around the island and putting stuff in. So I'm guessing your focus is going to be elsewhere.
Well, the network's nearly done. So in order to build this network, we've had to dig up nearly 700 kilometres of footpath and road on the island. So, and so we're at, you know, we're down to the last 30, 40 kilometres of digging. There'll still be, you know, little bits that were missed the first time through because we couldn't get way leaves, couldn't get, you know, permits to close the road, whatever. Lots of reasons why some things got left behind. But by the end of this year, we'll have, the service will be available to around about 75,000 homes, premises, homes and businesses. And then there are only another 10,000, and that includes all the caravans and the beach huts and,
right,
and places where you just might need broadband. So, and all of those tend to be, you know, not on the public highway, which means we need permission from the landowners to go and build there, or, you know, blocks of flats. So, you know, to do the job properly, you need to run cables internal to the blocks of flats. So again, that has to be carefully planned and managed, and we need permission. So by the end of this year, if you like, the job's largely done, and then over the next few years, 3, 4, 5 years, we go back over and fill in all the gaps. So at the end of it, out of those 85,000-odd premises, we expect to be able to serve about 83,000 of them directly with full fibre. That's a really big number, a really high percentage compared with anywhere else in the country. And then those last couple of thousand, you know, we do have plans about how we'll serve those. They do tend to be isolated properties at the end of a big long lane, and you know, it's really hard. You know, this costs, if you want a rule of thumb, this costs £150 a meter. So if you've got a house at the end of a, you know, 500 meter long lane, you know, that's a lot of money for just one house. So you need to find a different, more economical way of doing it. So I'm boring you, but short answer is, we finish the network, and then, you know, we persuade people to move to us, join us, and enjoy some of the best broadband available anywhere in the world.
I've got to ask you this question. Is there, because knowing the terrain of the Isle of Wight, is there anywhere that you look at and think, oh, God, we've got to connect that one up at some point? Let me have a little think about that, how we're going to do it. Or have you already done it?
Has been hard. I mean, we're just, Haven Street's just, if it hasn't gone live already, it's just about to. I can't remember the name of the zigzag road from Wootton Bridge to Haven Street.
Right.
You know, the one that runs through the woods.
Oh, Brox, is it Brox Cops, or is it,
Absolute nightmare, you know, windy, twisty road. And, you know, and especially where it's, on a road with no footpath, that just costs more. But, you know, we're in Mottiston, just that's gone live. So the places we're in now are in some of the out of the way places, places like Chael Green that were due to be done. Already, we've hit a few hiccups because of the landslip there. So you've got one road closed to Ventnor. You can't, and there's only two roads. You can't close one of the other ones in order to work on it, because it would cause chaos. So a few challenges there. But no, we are endeavouring to get to, you know, anywhere where there's little groups of houses rather than a single isolated house. We should get there, and then we're just about to, no one's listening, are they? I can tell you in secret. So we're just about to do a deal with SSE to be allowed to use some of their poles to get to some of the more out of the way, places. So that means you don't have to dig it. You can put it on an electricity pole and get to the property that way. So we're doing everything we can to give everyone their very own full fibre, and then where we can't, we'll look at either satellite or 5G technologies to do the rest.
Sounds like you're also working together. You know, obviously, you mentioned Essie, you know, that they are like the, you know, the opposition, and it's nice that they're sort of having to say, they can say to you, hey, look, you can use our poles if it makes it easier.
Well, they're charging us money for doing it, so that's, you know, that's why they're doing it, because they're going to make some money from it.
Oh, well, at least you're all working together, and I say at the end of the day, we're all going to get, you know, fantastic broadband, aren't we? I mean, that's it. I mean, our broadband has been exceptional. There's only one time that it went off, and I think it was probably last January. There was a power cut or something. Somebody had cut through some cables or something, and you know, straight away, I phoned and just checked because I wasn't sure, and the lovely thing was I could speak to somebody. I could speak to somebody that was real on the other end of a telephone that could tell me what was going on because they're local, and that's what I like about it.
Yeah, we strive. We don't have a, you know, what they call an IVR. We don't have a press one for this, press two for that, press three for the other. So, you know, we're clinging on to that. You get straight through to a real person. You can chat to us online via Facebook Messenger. We've got a WhatsApp chat coming shortly. So lots of different ways to talk to us. And, you know, with a view to giving that really exceptional local service.
So what's the future then? You know, because obviously the technology is always changing, and I know, you know, we've been working towards the fiber deal for and it's upgraded every now and again. You can, you know, there's a little bit more that you can get, a little bit more juice, a little bit more power. What's the next thing? What's the next thing you're working on?
I think that's really, that's really driven by what people want it to do. So, you know, the bandwidth we are providing already, so our fastest speed is 900 megs, so, you know, and that's guaranteed, doesn't slow down at peak time, you know, you get 900 meg. We can do faster, and maybe we will, but there's nothing you would do at home, that can, you know, use, more than that. We can do 10,000 meg, so, you know, we have that for business customers. Could we give that to all of our residential, or, you know, consumer customers? You know, in due course, yes, but, you know, what would you use it for? The equipment to support 10,000 meg, you know, is very expensive, so when the price of that comes down, it's very, very doable. It's about, you know, the other part of it is it's not just about the broadband into your home, but it's about the Wi-Fi signal all around your home. So that's really important. And of course, we built it, you know, you talked about the, you know, the power failure. You know, all of our cabinets have got batteries that last for 8 hours, minimum of four. So most power cuts don't last that long. So even a power cut shouldn't cause the service to fail. So it would, you know, vary on, and even someone digging the road and cutting our fiber, that takes a few customers out at a time. It's not going to take the whole network down because it's been built, you know, to survive what we call a fiber cut. And actually we've got one of those as we speak right now in affecting cows in Newport. There's no customers offline. But, you know, one of the fibers has been, you know, completely cut in two by a contractor.
Do you dread those days when you get that message to say, I ain't got the internet, what's going on? Come on, come and fix this cable.
It's not like that. It's, you know, we generally, of course, if you're sitting in the middle of, you know, streaming Vectis Radio or watching Netflix and it stops, you know, there's something wrong, but we can generally see that straight away as well, and we're on it straight away. But like I said, it's been built that there's another way around. So actually, that fiber cut, there was a little peculiarity on this one in that some people's telephones stopped working, but as soon as we realized they'd stopped, we were able to reroute that and fix that as well. So it's a, you know, I know I'm saying this, and I work for White Fiber, so I would, wouldn't I? But we've really built the network to, to survive a lot of damage and keep working. And, you know, the whole principle of the internet, if you want to talk about history, you know, the internet was originated in the 50s and 60s to survive nuclear war. So it's a clever technology in how it, sends the information around the place and finds a way to get it there one way or another.
Do you know, it's fascinating. You just took me back to a year that I wasn't around, but I'm going back sort of, I don't know, 80s, 90s, when we didn't really know too much about things. The best thing we could have hoped for was a mobile phone, maybe late 80s. And then in the 90s, we all started getting into the internet, and it was never like a sound signal. It was always break up. there'll always be problems or so on. It just seems the technology just seems to be more solid these days, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, that goes back to your earlier question, what next? And I said, well, that's down to what do people want it to do? Stuff we do today that we absolutely take for granted. You know, you wouldn't have dreamt of being able to do it, you know, 20, 30 years ago, you know, buying your Costa coffee in the morning with your phone.
Yeah.
You know, it's theoretically possible, but who'd have thought we'd actually be doing it, you know, or, you know, in my case with my watch, if I want to, you know, try and look smart. And so those things that we haven't even thought of yet, are going to need, the thing they all have in common is they need connectivity. They need to be connected. They don't all need vast amounts of connectivity, vast data rates, but some things that are coming along, will do. So AI, the big thing that's being talked about at the moment, is going to come much faster than you can imagine. That needs vast data centers and vast flows of data. So, I can see that making demands on people's requirements over the next 5-10 years. As you know, at the minute, AI businesses are investing in AI, but in 5-10 years' time, you know, in the same, or to try and draw a parallel, editing your own videos, right? So everyone can do that now with a video editing program, you know, built into their phone.
Yeah.
And videos are heavy. They need a lot of connectivity. So that wouldn't work if you didn't have good connectivity. So, editing AI to make it do, more things for you personally, you know, that's going to come in the next 5 years or so. You'll have, and that's going to need a lot of bandwidth because those, you know, an AI client, you know, uses a lot of data because it's sending a lot of data back and forward, to process the information.
I'd imagine there's a lot of people out there that are a little bit scared by that. You mentioned AI, and it's, but these are probably the same people that don't realise that they're watching the television via an internet connection now. They're watching it unbeknownst to them that, you know, like go back 20, 30 years, it was a normal TV. Now it's an internet TV, but they've got no idea.
That's right. So if you've got Sky Screen, you don't have a dish, you don't have a TV aerial, it's all going over your broadband connection. When you're watching iPlayer, ITVX, you know, any of the apps on your TV, that's all going over the internet. And the quality of video is getting better and better, and the higher quality of the video, the more bandwidth you need. Next year, sees the launch of, the first streaming version of, what used to be called Freeview and FreeSat. So, and that technology will be built into TVs. So in the way every TV at the moment comes with an aerial socket, in future that aerial socket won't be there. It'll just be, you know, a Wi-Fi module or an Ethernet cable. And you follow that to its conclusion, then sometime in the next 10 to 20 years, those TV transmitters will all cease and will all stop. And, you know, everyone will be streaming their video in the same way that, you know, a radio in a way is ahead of TV in that, you know, lots of people in their cars listening to the radio are actually streaming it. They're not listening to it on an FM signal these days.
Absolutely true. Last week I visited my father-in-law and I was so shocked to find out that he's watching the television using an aerial.
Yes.
And then he was moaning and groaning because he couldn't get yesterday the channel and it only had about 40% signal.
Yes.
And I said, if you could go online,
it's so much better.
You'd probably have 100%.
And I think, you know, people don't need to be frightened of it. The secret to making this technology work is to make it easy. And as you just said, for people not to even realize that that's how it works these days. So you make it, you know, you make it, you know, invisible to the end user, that it's a different way of doing things, and you know don't frighten people with it. You know, just encourage people to be curious, to investigate it, and then when you do, you think, oh, well, this is good, because actually, if you've got a streaming box,
yeah,
you've got hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of channels, whereas a TV aerial, this, you know, gives you, I think, 120, 140, something like that. Not, you know, which, of course, compared to the 2, 3, or 4, or 5 that we had in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, is a lot.
It's fascinating, isn't it? It really is. People that are so nervous about the internet, they're so nervous, and yet when you point out, look, don't be nervous, you're already doing it. You're already watching your Netflix and your TV on an internet channel. So, you know, you're halfway there.
Yeah, but even, you know, some people are even, you know, a bit nervous about experimenting with Netflix.
Yeah.
So, you know, give it a go. You know, it is a bit different from using the up and down button to change channels, because you've got 4 arrows now instead of just 2, up, down, left, right, with a button in the middle. But, you know, you master those up, down, left, right, and the button in the middle, you can pretty much do almost anything.
It's not hard. Don't be scared of it. Look, I could talk to you all day. It's fascinating. I think what you've achieved in the last X amount of years is incredible. And those numbers that you read out earlier on were phenomenal. So if people were wanting to know more about White Fibre, what should they do?
I mean, it's dead easy. Whitefibre.com, or just call us 240-240 and... we'll be happy to help.
And you get through to someone that's actually here on the island that can help.
You will indeed.
And just before you go, because I'm hoping we can set this up, but you came in a couple of years ago and we were talking about you were going to sponsor a PhD for someone that was going to be working with squirrels in the area, that was going to be helping, you know, us here on the Isle of Wight. Just, if you could give us a brief, because I know you said this is like a 20-minute subject and probably longer than that. If you could give us a brief update, and maybe we can set up the lady that's got the PhD.
Yeah, we've got a student at Bournemouth University who's doing a study on red squirrels here in the Isle of Wight. So the Isle of Wight red squirrels, along with those in Guernsey and on Brown Sea Island, just in Poole Harbour, are the last true English red squirrels. So red squirrels that you see in Scotland have interbred with Swedish red squirrels, so they're not pure English red squirrels. So there's two things. There are around 3,500 red squirrels on the island, but they've, because of changes to the environment, they're split in 2 populations now. So there's a worry about inbreeding and how that will impact the population. And then the other aspect of it is an analysis of their genes to try and determine how well they'll survive global warming by comparing the English red squirrel genes to the genes of the Italian red squirrel. So if the English red squirrel here on the island has enough Italian genes, so to speak, then chances are global warming won't impact them too much. So that study's at the end of the second year of that, so with another year or 2 to run. So, yeah, we should get the young lady in who's doing the study, hoping to get her doctorate out of it, to have a chat about it.
Fantastic. I'm hoping we can get to meet her and talk about things.
Yes.
I'm now visualising a little film of Italian squirrels and English squirrels and Swedish squirrels, and they're all talking, hey, Giuseppe. And I just think that'll be a great film, wouldn't it, for the island? I'm visualising, maybe I've got to make this, jot some ideas down and take this, because I just think that it would be so funny.
You mean like an animated movie, yeah, with the,
But with the emphasis on
squirrel wars,
the future, the wars, but educational as well.
Yes,
I just think it'll be fantastic. See, I can see the cogs moving over there as well now.
There you go. Yeah.
All right, but that's my idea. I'm having it. I'm going to work on it.
And when the movie comes out, we'll stream it.
Yeah. great to spend some time with you, and I hope it's not 2 years before you come back again.
I hope so. I hope so too. And look, since I was here last time, you've won awards here now, award-winning Vectis Radio. So it's really, really good to see the station doing so well. So big thank you to you.
And thank you. Thank you for your support as well. John Irvine, have yourself a great Thursday.
Thank you very much. You too.
Let's hope you don't get too many calls to say, hey, come and sort this cable out.